outlaw. Fishing lakes near Minocqua. My bae's from Harshaw. She's good with a glide. Hooks her all eagle claw. Fish the Missy with my pawpaw. Hooked him right in the jaw. Just using braided line. You can find me in the Ranger. My middle name is Danger. Put muskies in my manger. That's what I call my net. I'm a musky outlaw. Fishing lakes near Minocqua. My bait is from Harshaw. She's good with the glide.
Yeehaw! All right, folks. Welcome to the Musky 360 Podcast. A Jay Bird.
Work, on location, work, Steve. Bird.
He's
Workbird, yeah.
Lurking amongst the shadows of the Bucktails. What's going on in the action alley?
In the action alley? That's, it's been really good. Yeah, things have heated up big time around here. I mean, it's been 80 degrees every day.
There you go.
Unfortunately, sunny every day, but maybe that's helping a lot. I mean, the weed growth exploded in the last
exploding
week.
Exploding weeds.
So that's excellent. Yeah, a lot of good fish caught, and yeah, good shallow bite going right now.
Well, there you go. Well, I'll tell you, shocking twist there. I'm driving back from the lake, whatever, can't remember what day, couple days ago, and Danny calls me, Danny of the Herbex, and says it's like 99 on the boat. So they are in a heat wave. So we've been worried about late
You're
ice.
You're telling me the ice is gone.
The ice is gone, folks. It is.
No more pond hockey for Danny.
There's no pond hockey problems in Canada. I can promise you
that.
What
a turnaround, huh? That's crazy.
Well, it's going to be interesting to hear the early reports for everybody, because I woke up yesterday and went, I cannot believe it's June. Time is not something I have a lot of. And I just kind of blinked my eye and went, oh my goodness, it's June already. And, you know, a lot of guys are, you know, they're getting their cast in here or there, but everybody's kind of, you know, waiting for the big show, you know, the old Canada Excursiones.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, when you have that kind of crazy warm up that fast, I mean, what's that going to do to the spawn, or how, you know, what kind of staging you're going to be at? It's going to be interesting to see, because, I mean, hopefully weather never stays the same, but it's kind of crazy where you just go cold, 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 late snow, late ice, and then 99. So, and yeah. I looked on my phone. I thought, I mean, I believe him, but I'm driving and, you know, look on my phone, is like still 80 there. Like 10 o'clock at night. I was like, okay. So a lot of dead Canadians, I'm betting, you know.
You know, I had a customer come in yesterday, and he was talking. He's on a lake over near Eagle River, and he had Sunday he was out, and he had two spawning muskies off his dock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was watching for a while, and they were getting harassed by bass and stuff like that. But, yeah, I mean, it's not completely over, obviously.
Oh, no, you guys smack dab in the middle of her, and I've heard a few other reports of, you know, just intermittent spawning. It's just one of those years you're going to have a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
Spread out a bit. Sure.
It's going to be spread out. Someone will, I guarantee you this, you'll hear some shocking report like from 2 weeks from now. If they're spawning on so-and-so, like, it will happen. When you have stuff like this, that would be my guess in Canada, because you end up, you know, you have these way too quick warm-ups. And people always ask, well, how do you get tiger muskies, right? And that, folks, is how you get tiger muskies, right? You get way too much of a ramp-up, or you have these weird, not weird, nature's nature. It's not weird to nature. It's doing what it's doing. But you have these massive, quick fluctuations like that, and that's often how you get everything up shallow. Like, you know, like those temps in Canada, it's like, okay, it's now everything spawning temperature. Go, you know. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. Other than that, still shellacking, Jay. Had a guy in the boat yesterday, Craig. Shout out to Craig. I don't do that often, but big podcaster, he and his wife for years. We got Got the old 4-footer there yesterday. That was cute.
Nice. I didn't see that one, but yeah, I've been seeing some pictures from it. You've been getting some good fish.
Oh, yeah. But the fun thing was that, Jay, only reason I bring it up was just... it was just one of those moments where you launch and you just like the heavens open up within 10 minutes and it just dumps on you the entire, I was just thinking about it because I was getting my gear in the house. I actually have to fly out here shortly and I was getting the gear and I was just looking at how wet me and dude caught, you know, nice fish in the net, right? Happy. But most of the conversation was about how wet your shoes were that kind of day. So that's always fun. But, I bring that up just as far as a discussion we're having on the boat was so funny of the expectation. He's been a podcaster for forever, right? Since as long as it's been podcast. What are we doing today, right? What are you doing? What you know, and you would have your preconceived notions of what I would do on any given day, right? Now, dig, if you will, this picture, Jay. It is cloudy, low-hanging clouds, and if it's not pouring on you, it's drizzling, right?
Ooh, I haven't seen that in a while. Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Blades and top water. And he was laughing because he's like, the last thing I thought we would do. Right? The last thing I thought we'd do. No, this is totally, you know, I own bucktails and topwaters. I promise you that. But we were talking about when it's appropriate, it's appropriate. I had, you know, started out the day where, you know, we missed old Ironsides, Jay. 34 inches of pain, right? That one came in, nipped, and we didn't get it. And then you get a 4-footer. You know, and we're in the bite window on that, but you go the right play. Running the right play is so important, which is, and I told him, I said, I don't, you know, never trying to quantify everything, but I was laughing on the boat where I said, okay, if you asked me, right, what is the 10 out of 10 every signal points to throwing blades in top water? You're in it, right? This is it. And just that discussion and just to pound on people, you got to fish the conditions, you know, and I just say that because I'm always ragging on blades and topwater, but you go, I'm definitely not going to be bouncing a critter off the bottom in 20 feet today. Right.
With those conditions, you just start the day and attack early, you know, shallow and noisy.
And you don't have to, it's that thing of you don't have to overthink everything. You know, like the new book, Muskie IQ. Yesterday was musky moron, throw blades in top water, rinse, repeat, big fish in net, right? And there's a time and a place for both. And that's, you know, the one thing I just thrown out there is overcomplicate it when, or not overcomplicate it. It only has to be complicated when it has to be complicated, right? And that is kind of, often I make fun of, or make fun, but poke fun of old Homer Thompson's over there burning bucktails in the weeds, right? It's noon. It's high, bright sun. You know, temperatures drop 20 degrees, Jay. What's, you know, and we're over there burning blades, right? Not the game plan. But when the things are right, you can shut the brain down and huck and chuck. But You got to balance.
Homer's situation there is almost obvious too, though. You know, really, it's one extreme to the other. That would be an extreme example. Noon, high bright sun, light winds, or north winds, northeast winds. It's like we got to get down deep and wait for the magic to happen.
Thank you. You pulled the morsel from the sky of exactly where I'm going.
Morsel. Yeah,
that's it. Which is, when we're talking about assess the situation or what the reality of the situation is here we are, right? Let's fish what we're given. And again, at times it doesn't have to be overly complicated, but that's just looking at everything there. Make an assessment, but making a realistic assessment. And I also say that it wasn't Craig doing it. yesterday, but you know, there's been times you get me and Dr. Borb in the boat together, right?
One
might overanalyze the situation, right? Now, the muskie gods are good enough to me and Dr. Bob that every time we fish together, we're given the hardest. God, why do you give us? Why do you give me the hardest tasks, right? Anytime Bob and I fish together, it's gonna be like as hard as it can be. But
condition wise, difficult. Right. It's right off the bat.
You name it all, it's coming. But what I'm saying is, just to put it out there, where the you've got to realize, and I know a lot of what we talk about, we're generally talking about tough conditions. Generally tough. What everybody else, you know, throw your bucktail. And dude in the boat had me laughing because he's, you know, it's like we're talking about, you know, he's obviously OG podcast listener because we're talking about freaking show collars and how many more blades can I put on the back of a bucktail, right? Does it matter? No. Does it make you feel good? Probably doesn't. But like I said, there's a nice balance between being a ape that chuck blades turn handle, but situational baseball, Jay. That's what I'm talking about. Who's on third? Anyway, that's kind of, don't overcomplicate it when it doesn't have to be overly complicated. Other than that, are there any comings and goings other than wax worms, beaver tails, and crawlers?
Bus bedding. Yeah, if you want to start your own worm farm, we got
folks,
it, baby.
We've got. Folks, sit down. Pull the car. Pull over now. Clock out. Tell your boss you're going on break because you're going to need to get your hands on some of this worm bedding we got at the Muskie Shop. It's premium. It's
only the finest. Yeah, it's premium. It's the best ever made.
Artesian. Yeah,
I mean, We're a store, Steve.
It's artesian fishing stuff. Worm bedding.
I don't know about that, but, you know, it's good.
It's. Do you know when they, Jay, when the sad girl that really didn't want to touch you gets done cutting your hair down at Great Clips and she sweeps your hair up, right?
And you think, must have happened
right,
to you. Yeah,
right. And you think you got a chance? Hey, what are you doing? And she's sweeping up your hair there at the Great Clips where you paid $3 for a haircut. I bet that's what worm bedding's made of.
Well, it could be. You know,
sad,
it has the same texture.
Lonely
and smell.
Guy's hair.
Yeah.
Hey, how long you been a cosmetologist, Bethany? Sorry, I had another log.
But anyway, back to your question. Hey, what's going on here? Steve, we're getting so much stuff in on a daily basis. It's almost overwhelming. Yeah. Just refills, you know.
Refills,
we got some new stuff coming, but it's just not since the last podcast, I guess. Nothing super new. Some bass stuff. We got a bunch of bass stuff, actually. Ooh. So that.
Speaking of, good segue for me. Leaving on a jet plane, but I do know
where are you going?
I'm going to fish with Clun. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Tell him JJ says hi.
I will. I got to freaking call my mom and say I got a boyfriend. I'm going bass fishing.
You see, so,
that's the hardest part. Hey, I have a confession to make.
Get some big ones on the Banshee.
No, I'm going to. It'll be interesting. I'm sure I'll have something to report back. I always learn something from that man. So whatever I do, I'll report back.
Yeah, he's the king.
Yeah, we're going out to. He's got kind of cool. You said bass stuff, but he's got a new bait he's working on. So he asked me to come along and, you know, do the do here. So freaking. There's no muskies where we're going, Jay.
Top secret locale.
We're going to Arkansas.
Kansas. Okay.
But I'll report back on that. It'll be interesting because I'll tell you, that guy, it is not, hanging with him is not, you're never lacking epiphanous moments, Jay.
Really?
Yeah. He'll just say, well, I don't know. Usually because we're so high on peyote that we don't know what's happening. But, you know, he'll just say something, and he'll be like, oh, that's important. But no, I will report back as to what's going there. But anyway, we better get after it. And like you did make the good point there, because there have been an email or two. When are you getting this? When are you getting that? Jay kind of set it up there for it is restock season. So I say this because people ask this, that, and the other. Or, oh, I had it. Dude yesterday brought it up. Other people were, I had it in my cart and it was gone. That's because it sold. Gone. Yada. Mm. It's out of there. So use the restock thing if you're looking for, you know, I need a Gooch's Tallywhacker in egg yolk yellow.
Mm-hmm. Right? We got them. Actually, I'm standing right in front of them.
I know that because I'm watching you.
Yeah, I can tell.
Eye in the sky. Jay's
by you're on TV right now in the store.
Jay is by the Gooch's. That's called Muskie 360. I'm in your headphones. I'm on the TV behind you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm in your hearts and in your mind. Anyway,
24/7.
Speaking of God, it's just segue. I saw this. Something of note. Because we're going to be working on very shortly and finishing up a lot of them. The Muskie Shop, Muskie School, the videos for the website. You'll have them.
Yeah.
It's going to be matriculating out. That project is underway.
Gotcha.
But okay. I saw this first question while you were talking, Jay, and every time you do that, I tune out and do other things. So I kind of peeked at this question. And he was talking about handling. So I'm going to get into the question, but we're going to cover this, Jay. We have to. And we're going to get one in the net and just show you how to handle one step by step, right? Because I think that's important. And again, you know, let me just get to the question and go there. Michael, Steve, Jay, wanted to say thanks for helping me catch my first ever muskie, a beautiful 43-inch cabbage dragon.
Awesome.
Caught on a banshee over Memorial Day weekend in the Northwoods. My question is, how do you pull them out of the net? How and he goes on to say, slimy fish missiles.
Okay, so, haven't heard that before in a sign like that.
You know, frickin' trademark it for he does, Jay. Get on it now. And he put Rudis to work. Say hi, Tom.
Oh, I can hear him talking.
We're going to need, hold on. We're going to need 73,000 of those beads.
Actually, he's doing that right now.
So if you don't understand, Tom, if you buy parts and pieces from the Muskie Shop, that falls under Tom's responsibility. And there's nothing better than hearing a man order, we need number 7 beads, silver.
He's on it, man. He's on it 24/7. That's why they call him the Tominator.
The bead man.
Yep. Well, and every other thing, so everything. Mm-hmm. You name it. He's on it.
He's got this string of all the beads, and it starts.
We got the owner, Jim Stewart, here too, somewhere. I just saw him, but he's gone. Mm-hmm. Okay, he's on the move.
He's always on the move. Jay's live from the shop here.
He's checking out the new parking lot with the new painted lines we got.
Ooh,
which is quite exciting.
That is cool. We're gonna have roller hockey league. Tuesday night, Muskie Shop Rower Hockey League.
Just before the bash. You got to kick off the bash with a little pavement hockey tournament.
You got to sign a waiver. I promise. Yeah, pavement hockey.
We'll get Freddie over here in the goal, and I know an NHL ex player. Maybe he can come by. He's in town now, so yeah, we can make it exciting.
I would. We talked about this before. Can we just get Freddie in the net and then just let Patty Dwyer just rip him to shreds with a real
just
puck?
Just pummel him with wrist shots.
Take it. Take it, bitch. Take it.
Take the pain, Freddie.
For $100, will you take an NHL nut shot? No.
Okay. Start at 100. We might have to go higher, but I bet he would.
I'm thinking. And we could just have Muskie Jackass right there in the parking lot, Jay.
That'd be awesome.
Who's willing to take a Patty Dwyer? His son would probably tear you up too, you know.
His son is getting really
he's
good.
A stick.
He owns a machine.
Who's willing to take it in a chill nut shot with a Milik street hockey ball for the bidding starts at $6? Anyway, goodness, sorry.
Boy, you could have Elmer do the play-by-play. Get some!
Get some!
Yeah, yeah,
you're just immortalized in the Muskie Shop TV intro. It's all the fish holes and then just one dude getting crushed with a 90-mile-hour slap shot to the old hockey bag.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Anyway, man, back to this guy's question.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
How do we pull him out? So, Jay, is your pull-out game strong, weak in the net? What? How's your game?
I never thought of it that way. I think the main thing to do is give some center support when you're pulling them out.
There we go.
Yeah. What do you think?
Well, the number one, dealing with these things, let's look at what is happening. What just happened? I keep talking about yesterday, but it was eventful, right? Of another component backing it up is it was such muddy water, Jay, that I had difficulty netting the fish where I couldn't see the fish. I could see the line.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Darren was an animal. So the first time, straight miss, right? I thought I knew which way it was going. I thought it was zigging, it was zagging, right? And I'm just blindly trying to net. We have no clue how big it is or anything. I'm just trying to net where the line should be, and it was. But the first thing that happens, get it, it's halfway in, and it's balled up, right? Which is my first job is hold this net handle while I pull the yoke over and untangle and unfurl this thing, right?
Right.
To the point I'm always making. But the move I said is hand me those Nipex right there. I go snap, snap, and cut that thing loose, right? I actually destroyed most of the bait just by cutting stuff to loosen that up. So the first and foremost thing when we get one in the net, let's make sure she's not rolled up, balled up. That whole mess is out of the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the entire time, I'm watching the fish, but we want to watch our conservation. We want to cause as little damage as possible, right? Straight up, let's figure that out. Are we going to handle the fish is the next thing. And the reason I say that is I was having difficulty because the water was so dirty of where is she hooked, what's going on. So I had to get the fish high to get the hooks out, right? She can't be down the bottom of the bag. I can't even see the freaking fish's eyes to work. You know what I'm saying? You understand what I'm getting at? It's like
water's that dark.
Right.
Okay.
That mud, it was just pouring the rain mud runoff.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to work on this fish. Anyway, I see blood in the water, right? I'm seeing blood in the water and I was like, oh no. Well, it was just where the hook was, right? It was just a little bit of blood from the jaw, but I see this one little cloud of blood and it wasn't a lot. It happens on occasion on a jaw hook. You just put a 7-0 in their face. What do you think happens, right?
Yeah,
and I'm
yeah.
like, first and foremost, is this in the gills? Did I miss something? Okay.
Right.
If it had been, that we're not even going to get a picture. We're just going to go, well, right, if we got heavy bleeding or anything. But this was just a little puff of blood that came out from where the hook penetrated in the jaw. Got it right in the sweet spot, Jay.
Okay.
Got it right in the sweet spot. So that's the first thing before going into the handling routine. After that, how are we going to get them out? And Jay said supporting the body. I take my time at this point every time. I'm not trying to rush it. I'm not trying to manhandle, right? But when you get your hand up under that thing's jaw, right? And so we want to make sure no matter what, we are sliding our hand under the jaw. And it's better, again, this is why we're going to do this in a video for you. It's better to see it than hear it. You're going to stay out of the gills. You're as tight to that gill plate as you can be. We're not in there fumbling around, right? You got to get your fingers where they need to be, as they say. That's what the pros say, Jay. So you got to get them in there, and you're holding it tight to the outside jaw. Once your hand is in that fish's head, you better commit. Right, we don't want to be jamming our hand in and out of there repeatedly. Not a good thing.
No, of course not.
Don't do that. Things to not do, Jay. Don't jam your hand in and out repeatedly. We don't want to do that. You can cause damage. You can cause harm. So,
yeah. I was just thinking, as soon as you start pulling them vertically out of the net, if that thing starts to head shake, you can feel it tighten up and about to go. Gently lower it back in there.
Yeah.
You know, if you have to get a new grip, secure grip under the jaw there, then so be it. But that first head shake, just let it get it out of its system before you bring it up.
It's going to do it. That's it, you nailed it. It is usually once you turn them vertical, that is not, I'm trying to jump. This doesn't feel good.
Right. No doubt.
It's a physiological response. And that's what I'm trying to convey. None of this is natural or normal. Right. Water supports their weight. And they're used to feeling probably weightlessness. I don't know what they feel, but let's call it weightlessness or their ability to suspend and be. And now we're it's like a totally different physiological experience. The best thing you can do, get the head up, then the other hand under them, boom, and up and over. Right now, stage for your photos, and be prepared to chuck that fish over the side of the boat. Period. That's the one thing with new anglers. If don't drop them in the boat. Make sure, like, if you're posing with that fish, if it's going to come out of your hands, that it's going to go in the water, not in the floor. So we'll do a video on this. I think it's important to do it where it's like, I've seen handling videos, and it's like, we need a handling video that's not, like, preachy. It's just like, here's the steps. So we'll get all over that and finish this off.
Well, I like it.
Yeah. Don't jam your hand in and out repeatedly, Jay. First and foremost, I've seen it happen. I've seen it go awry where it's like, okay, oh, I'm repositioning. Oh, and it's like, oh, you got a handful of gills. Not good. Tony, my 11-year-old is showing interest in starting musky fishing. What are the easiest, safest lures I can get him started on? On the other side, my dad has never caught a musky and is getting older and can only cast for short periods. Trolling hasn't been great at our lake. I'm in central Minnesota while others are casting. Okay. What can he drag, jig, etc., while the boat slowly moves along? So we have hard juxtaposition, Jay. We have a kid that probably has all the energy in the world, and we got Papaw, right? Crusty and dusty, wants to sit down, probably doesn't want to figure eight, to be honest with you. So 11-year-old, and he says safety. Now, here's my assumption. It's not for the 11-year-old safety. It's for everyone else in the boat's safety. Right?
Something to think about. True.
Get him a pounder. Put two extra number eight trebles on it, right? And just let him wing at your back of your neck. Best thing that I can tell you, regardless of skill level, regardless of age, I should say, and it's a completely, I misspoke. The skill level doesn't matter is a spinnerbait. So if you got an 11-year-old, if I have a young or a youth angler on my boat, they are going to be the king of spinnerbaits, right?
That's a good call. I tend to agree with that.
Yep. Super high hookup percentage, super hard chance of hooking you in the back of the neck with it, right?
Yeah, no treble hooks.
Yep.
Right.
You get hit with a spinnerbait. It alleviates quite a bit of, I've got too many weeds on, help me.
You're the guy.
Yeah.
I can see that scenario.
So, and this dude, yeah, that's all I can keep thinking about. Tony, you're now a guide for a child in a geriatric. You're playing. You will never get to fish if you got the two of them in the boat. You're running around like a weasel on a hot skillet, right? So how can Tony get to fish while keeping everyone happy, right? So for the 11-year-old, I would go with if he can huck it, the Steve's meat grinder, the figure eight spinnerbait, which is really weedless and has a big blade. You're in Minnesota, so I was thinking bigger. If he has problems throwing that, just put him on something like a Grim Reaper or another, like a standard figure eight small musky spinnerbait. Don't do the bass size, but like the actual musky grade, but the downsizers. I know Grim Reaper has that, Jay. Who else?
Grim Reaper Hot One, Figure Eight Boss.
There you go.
Rad Dog, original Rad Dog. They're great. Ace Baits.
Ooh. There you go. Ace will do them. So they're just great. There's some moderate size, but tell that child that if he throws one of these, he will hook a pig, and I guarantee it'll happen anyway. You can't go wrong with a spinnerbait, big willow leaf, and just that means, because the one thing with kids turn the handle real fast. That's all they want to do. Put them on a willow leaf spinnerbait, because the willow leaf will actually get him at depth a little bit, keep him out of trouble. Obviously, the next option for that is going to be a topwater for a youth angler. It's not nothing more exciting than that. You know, things that you can burn. I think a Big Mac, right? So the Livingston topwater, it's not going to roll over. So he can just sit there and burn that thing. You love the Minnesota burn anyway. So blades, topwater for him. You know, when it comes to like a crank, if he wants to throw a crankbait, things like you can't go wrong with a depth raider. That would be like it's going to be kind of throw it out, turn the handle. If he stops it and it starts rising, that's not the worst thing I've ever seen.
It's not the worst thing. Yeah. Right.
And I'm that stick style bait, that straight bait of kids are very erratic. And if you watch a kid fish a hard bait, they'll turn the handle real fast, and they're just erratic, and they catch fish doing it.
Okay.
Because they're not going to sit there and do this perfect retrieve. So don't be afraid of putting him on like an 8-inch depth raider and say, just throw it and do whatever you want. And often at times you'll be shocked of them just getting eaten alive. And focus on straight retrieve stuff, right? Because trying to teach, okay, here, even you can show a kid how to use like a Titan. It's a simple bait. They're not gonna enjoy it. You know, you want things that they have, like the topwater,
that they can crank.
They can crank. And until kids are about 13, put them on something straight crank. Another great bait for that is the Smoker MD, the Smoker Shad, because it pulls. And you feel it. And that's what I'm trying to get. The best thing you do with a youth angler is give them something they're going to feel that it's doing something. I've tried and failed numerous times. And like, okay, put on a baby or a small, the 5-inch shallow raider, right? I've tried.
There's not enough vibration for him?
For a kid.
I see.
Right. Okay. That twitching it out. They're like, can I try it? And a kid does not give a crap if you're a guide or not. They'll go, can I use something else?
Yeah. Maybe a swim bait, like a Mustang or a swimming dog or something would be the wrong.
Yeah.
That's not enough vibration.
That's why I wouldn't, okay. I would go with, you know, you would think like a swim bait would be the ticket. It looks good to us that they got to feel it in a rod. That's what I've seen, because you know, if you're a full grown man on my boat, I'm going to look in and you go, no, that's what you're throwing. Right. But a kid, they're like, can I throw something else? And it's a lot of times because but the second I give them something that like they feel on the rod. Right. And it's not hard pulling, but it's like enough that they feel the action of the bait in the rod every cast. They're gravy. You can freaking turn your brain off. They're not going to ask for another bait. So things that have a little bit of resistance, but it's not like super heavy resistance, is what I'm always looking for. So like the Smoker Shad, it might be a bit too much, just depends, because they can get a little hard to crank if you're pulling, you know what I'm saying, if you're like burning them. But I would think like a bait that comes to mind too is that Rattle Hog from Hog Seekers. And that's a bait I don't mention much, but the Rattle Hog is a topwater, but it's got a lip on it, and you can kind of make it drive under. Freaking kids will just reel that in. It'll be on the top, and then they'll have it down 2 feet. Things of that nature that are really erratic and really visual, right? So resistance and visual, that's what I'm looking at for youth anglers. So think along those lines. That'll get you done. Now, we flip to the other side, Jay. Papaw wants to catch one, too. Probably gotcha. Doesn't want to stand up. Doesn't want to figure eight. What can he... You know,
he's sitting down. He's older guy.
Probably bitching a little bit now and again. Mm. Oh,
dang, it's hot out
dang,
today.
Dang, it's that hot. Type thing? Right, yeah. Right. Oh,
I could go for a lemonade right now.
Wish the wife would have packed us ham sandwiches and not turkey, but I'll eat this one. That kind of, it's what the old guys do, right?
Life of a guide, okay.
Right, old passive aggressive. It was better in the 70s before the Italians moved into town.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Took over the whole thing.
They showed up and opened a pizzeria and ruined all of Minneapolis.
Yeah. How the outfit ruined musky fishing.
Exactly. But how are we going to get the flip side of the coin on a fish?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, things that you can't screw up in musky fishing bait-wise. And I did this on purpose. So critter, right? Critter is dual-fold for me. It is an absolute scalpel, surgical tool for doing some really interesting things, right? You can crush a fish that's super negative and neutral on scope in open water. You can probatively pick timber and weeds and rocks apart, right? Or you can put it in somebody's hands that really doesn't care and they throw it out, turn the handle and stop, or they can bounce it by the boat and catch fish. And with that bait, I have had papaws from all across the country catch fish on it, right? All right, reel it up. And then, like, some dudes vertical, like, to say you're, like, jigging it doesn't make sense. I've literally just put guys on setups and said, let out the line, and when the line stops going, reel it up and then do it again. And they're just literally letting this thing, it's falling down to like 20 feet and they're reeling it up, and they'll reel it up to the leader and then let it down and yo-yoing 20, you know what I'm saying? You're not going to talk them into freaking to do something real. Sitting there yo-yoing this thing and catching fish, right? I've had some big walleye hit that thing and a few other things while people are just screwing around, if you will. So it's a great, just if somebody just doesn't really care a lot, it's a great screwing around bait. They can bounce that.
Doesn't care a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fact.
So the concept of vertical jigging, you can't really relay that really to some people is what you're saying, right? So it's just like, throw this out. They're going to stop reeling every once in a while because they're going to reach for a sandwich. Then they'll start reeling again.
Let me set the scene. Here's what my life is actually like. I'll look a person dead in the face, Jay. All right, I'm going to put you on this Bondi bait. Now, the goal of this is that we're going to lift the rod approximately 12 to 18 inches up under tension and lower it down under tension, right? And they will blankly nod their head. Right?
Gotcha.
It's like staring into the dead eyes of a Care Bear. Right? Okay, I get it. And you give them the bait, and you watch them rip the thing 4 feet in the air, and then it falls under slack line, and they got the hand. No. Yes. Sometimes people don't care enough that even that's too much. It's just the truth. They're like, they just don't get it. Right? Like I said, Teddy Ruxpin could do it better.
Yeah, they start making that sound in the boat, you're in trouble. It's gonna be a long day.
Just dead eyes. Why haven't we caught one? So, what I'm saying, baits for people that, in theory, want to catch one, but don't want to do the things they need to do to catch one, right? Critter, yes. Oh, this is real. I always say this. If you have a boat, you're a guide. You don't know it. You're not paid, but you're a guide, right? So that's why I tell these pro tips, right? Because you end up with here comes your brother-in-law, right? And his stinking kids, or your father-in-law, or your stepmom's brother's uncle's carpet guy, and you got to take them out. So things that like really click in my head for that critter, right? Bondi, it seems like it would be a no-brainer, but a lot of times it's not worth losing the Bondi bait on the bottom when they forget that they were supposed to be doing something. So I'm going to go with critter. Another bait that I will put people on that just don't give a shit is the baby beaver.
Okay.
And if you look at that bait, if they're just kind of I've seen people, Jay, that some people will overly work something, like when we're talking about we're sitting down on our butt like Bill Dance, right? They'll overly work it or they'll barely work it. I've had dudes sitting there holding spinning rods with a baby beaver on, and I go and push the trolling motor and we get shellac because those things just undulate no matter what you're doing with them, right? So critter, baby beaver bait, and the reason I say the baby beaver bait, you could have him, he could drop it down on a spinning rod and then reel it up all day, or he could drag it behind the boat between when you're moving spots, or, you know what I'm saying?
Right, the thing's in the water, it's get like if it he wet. Forgets to reel for a while, the thing, you know, just the boat
forget,
movement,
yeah, forgets
set
to
it
reel.
Into motion, and it might, right. might yeah, promote
has
it,
a, get it. Has a stroke, whatever.
Right.
It could happen. Right. These are baits that are dumb proof. If you have somebody on the boat that is into casting, like they're setting, but they're willing to cast, but they're not willing to figure eight, is the Viper, 6-inch Viper, or the Savage Gear Shine Glide. They, you know, those jointed glide baits.
Mm-hmm.
They look good in the water. You can't do them wrong. You know, oh, they're reeling it too fast. Oh, it's a really tight S pattern. They're reeling it too slow. It's a really wide glide. They're doing it intermittent. It's falling to the bottom, and hopefully it looks good, right?
Yeah, right. It's still working. Yeah, it's
clapping. The other, I'm trying to think of the, I'm going through my, I'm in this scenario, and I got to make it happen with that kind of person in the boat, is the H2O Barbarian.
Yeah, okay.
And it's funny, if you look, think about it, all the, of the baits I talk about, are we getting the knee-jerk reaction that always come up? These are not it, but these are applicational, what I use those baits for. Is that Barbarian is a giant rattle trap with two different pull points on it, right?
Yep.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because I only have soft tails. There's a hard version of that, correct?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the original does not have a
yeah,
hard tail.
Yeah, don't get the soft tail, because you end up like, I think my tail is gone. Right? Papaw will turn, give you a feeble look. I think I missed one, right? And your tail's gone. Just get the hardtail version. So basically, you got a giant rattle trap. Well, he can bang it around under the boat, and it looks cool. He can cast it on occasion and reel it in and bang it around, and it looks cool. It always looks good in the water. That's what I'm getting at. So dummy-proof baits, that's my, you know, don't give them a freaking 12-inch Sui and say, have fun, right? Those are kind of my list of best dummy baits.
Yeah, and weight-wise, you want to probably keep that under like 4 ounces, so it's something that he's not struggling to cast and or having issues casting, you know what I mean?
If you don't want him to come back out again, just give him an Alabama rig with toothy tufts.
Negative. Negative.
5 toothy tuft triple tails on a A-rig. Ah, that's yeah. Our little stuff. But yeah, that's my best list of stuff that shouldn't. And then, you know what's worse, Jay? What's practically insulting in that whole scenario?
What?
Is you'll be having a day, nothing will happen, and that guy that shouldn't catch one catches one. Oh, I got him! And you know what? Nothing smugger than the old guy that hasn't put in the work, sitting back there, barely working a bait, and he gets a fish. So just, you know, come on, man. You're not even figure eighting. You're coming. It's funny. I love it. Muskies don't care. And it's a great line. I stole it from Booker. Muskies don't take a resume.
Yeah.
And I've seen it happen so many times that it just proves it time and time again. So, Matt.
Classic.
I'm hoping to learn more about the relationship between weather patterns, sun angle, and topwater fishing. Do you find that certain weather conditions... you should have been here at the beginning of the podcast. Do you find certain weather conditions, light condition, or time of day consistently favor topwater presentations? And when do you decide to fish topwater? Okay. He goes on to say, how do we pick topwater baits between, say, a flap tail, a prop style bait, or a globe? He's been musky fishing for a couple years. Can't thank us enough. Well, thank you, Matt. So I was gabbing at the beginning where I said yesterday is low hanging clouds. We got dumped on a little bit, but it looks cloudy as heck, and it's drizzly and it's raining and it's warm. It's summer. That is the ultimate topwater day, right? That is the day of all days, right? But It's that's what we're looking for. Low-hanging clouds, dark, dim, right? The weather that most people walk outside and go, this is cruddy. That's great musky weather, right? So when we're thinking about a fish that's going to eat off the surface, that's and this is just the way I look at it. That is the edge of their world, right? It is probably the least safe place they can be, right? This is like if all my dreams came true and I could put Jay on the edge of space, right? Just one push.
Far away from you.
Yes. Just one push and he would be outside of Earth's atmosphere and he would implode as he sucked in the vacuum of space forever.
Cold, right? Dark, and silent up there, Steve.
No one can hear you scream. But
no, great line from Elmer's movie. But, the original propaganda film.
The original propaganda. But anyway, what I'm getting at is, if you are on the edge of where you can exist,
that's okay.
Now I say that.
Yeah, on one keep going.
On one side of this line, Jay's sucked into the vacuum of space where he cannot breathe. On the other side, he's fine. Now, Dr. Bob's rolling over in his car going, well, pardon me, there's probably depleted oxygen between. There's not like a hard boundary, right? But if you think about it, we're going from an oxygenated area to a place we're deprived of existence. Well, a fish, the surface, what I'm getting, God, I'm getting too far afield. But here it is. The surface, if they come out of that, that's not where they exist, right? And I'm saying this from the extent of they have to have a lot of good reasons or things have to be really good for them to be comfortable in predating or being in that space, right? That area. They don't want to jump out of the water all day long, every day. They don't want to feed off the top all day long, every day. And I jokingly saying the stuff about, you know, the edge of space, whatever. What I'm getting at is this. There has to be at least a logical boundary for them. We go, this is the least safe place I can be, and the bottom is the safest place I can be, right? Rule number one of being a fish, don't end up on dry land, right? So conditions have to be very good for them to be in that zone and predating in that zone. That's the way I conceptualize topwater, where you go, right? That's the ultimate edge. The bottom of the lake, consistent. The sides of the lake, consistent. The surface, that is the boundary between our world and theirs, Jay, right?
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I hear where you're coming from. Okay.
Right, and so to break that plane, or to break that, there has to be pretty good reasons to do so. Right. And right. Again, you'd think the edibles had kicked in already, but me and Herbie have gabbed about this, and this is kind of where our minds align on this. You go, that's kind of the ultimate break point between places they should be and places they shouldn't be. So the commitment level is high. Right. Now, I'm not talking about popping a fish out of a few feet of water, and blah, 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 blah. But for them to be exceptionally shallow and predating on that, you have to have an advantage. The light penetration thing is this. You have to have low light generally. Angles of sun, blah, 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 blah. I'm going down the rabbit hole on you. But that edge matters, right? So I want the conditions in my favor. Low light, which is low light, can be accomplished with where the sun is in the sky, right? Is it sun up, sun down, or is it cloudy? Low light is a prerequisite for that. The other thing is you will find midday topwater bites when the sun is like straight overhead. Right? Why that happens, you'll find it in the dead of summer, especially if you say you're on Eagle or Lake of the Woods or up north, and it is the sun is directly above and it is the middle of the day, you can find topwater eats.
Why do you think that is?
Because the angle of the sun and the light penetration and refraction. And it's the warmest part of the day, but light angle is different. And I think it matters enough.
Okay.
But can't prove it, but it's one of those things where okay, there's a what? There's a 1 hour window in the middle of the day where they're up on the surface or eating in the top 2 feet of water, and then magically, you know, what's changed, right? Well, the angle of the sun's the only thing. You know what I'm saying? Like change. So that's the only logical conclusion, especially if you can get a hot, flat day on Eagle Lake in July or August, dead flat calm. Give me a post giant jackpot in blue and silver. Thank you, Bob Mesencomer. Right? They're up eating off the top in I'm talking bluebird. Bluebird. Right? But now, are they up there because they're warming up because of the sun? Or are they up there and eating because they have an advantage? I don't know. I can't ask one. Last time I asked a question in the net, he couldn't tell me. Right? But that's the only thing. Anyway. Need to digress here because I'm running out of time. Flap tail versus the different styles of baits. Now, when it comes to topwater, that's such a narrow bandwidth of time to dial in.
Right? Yeah, right. Yeah, it would
be. It's a narrow bandwidth. So how do I dial in on topwater bite? Well, I'm not comparing the baits per se. I'm looking at how they perform at speed. Flap tail is my slowest, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a super slow presentation if done correctly. You can sometimes a bait of that nature can call fish up. I'll give it credit on that. Right? Now, realistically for me, if I look at a walk the dog versus a tail prop, because like a globe style bait, or you got the new hammer bait from this, you know, Lake X and all these other companies. Props a prop in my mind. Paint me wrong, that's fine, but if it's spinning and plopping, you all fall in the same world, right? They have different applications, but I'm saying their style. What kind of speeds is it effective at? Right? Like when we did the Big Mac with Livingston, my number one thing is this really, really good at low speed? Is it really, really good at high speed? That's all I need to know. That check, I'm done. Because I'm looking at what speed plays. Because at that point, your surface baits are surface disturbance. If it disturbs the surface and makes some kind of sound, blop, 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 we're in the game. So speed in advance, and then looking at it, conversely, the same thing would be like with the walk the dog baits, whether it be like a, you know, the walking boss, whether it be a pose, whether it be a weagle, is walk the dog baits present things that are there. You always hear the thing about you can get a eat if you get it to walk in place. You're creating a disturbance that is not forward advancing, right? So your goal is with a walk the dog is you have less forward advancement with increased displacement and disruption, right? Tail prop baits, they have to come to you. They go plop, 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 plop the whole way as you reel them in, right?
Yep.
A walk the dog is more displacement, more disruption in a smaller track, a smaller advance, a shorter advance, right? Now, how do I decide that? If they have been eating blades, they have been eating straight retrieve cranks or twitches, tail prop. Have they been eating glide baits, titans, jerk baits? Walk the dog. So I can tell you what topwater I'm going to throw depending on what follows an activity I've had during the day. So if it's a titan bite or a suic bite, I don't care what it is. Whatever your jerk bait bite is, if it's a dive rise, and if you look at it, it's the same response. So take the feedback from other presentations and apply it to topwaters. So if they're eating Medusa's, Bulldogs, dive and rise, glide baits, that's going to be walk the dog. If they're eating straight retrieve or crank or advanced things. So all those baits, if you divide the bait classes into, is it a displacement with a shorter advance versus just a straight steady signal? Because like I look at a topwater or blades or straight cranking as that is just a straight signal of evasion, right? So that would be how I pick it. Am I looking for the... looking for the struggle, Jay. The struggle is right now.
Yeah, it's not just the noise level. Sorry, there's a lot of people coming in here. I'm getting bombarded here. It's not just the noise level because obviously there's kind of a 0 to 10 scale on that from your your crawler types, you know, like your classic hog wobblers. That's a slow motion, slow retrieve.
Decent
amount of noise. It's got a lot of clack and a lot of water disturbance, and your flap tail is like near zero. And people, it's funny how many people get comments, you know, on site. How underwhelmed they are. It's like, oh, there's no action to it. Like,
that's the point, dingus. Is that how you answer that? You get that?
I just let them go. It's just like, it is a style of bait.
It's
very subtle, and subtle sometimes is what they need versus the loudest water throwing, aggressive rattling. It's like a chainsaw coming through the water. Would you want to eat that? Of course not, Steve. No one wants to eat a McCulloch.
All right. I got to get on a plane, Jay Bird. Say
good luck to you.
Morning.
Yeah, good morning.
All right.
Yeah.
Later,
thanks,
folks.
Guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Outlaw, fishing lakes near Minocqua. My bae's from Harshaw, she's good with a glide. Hooks a raw eagle claw, fish Bemidji with my pawpaw. Hooked him right in the jaw, just using braided line. You can find me in the Ranger, my middle name is Danger. Putting muskies in my manger, that's what I call my net.